Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to The Checkout and happy Pride. It's a podcast that you can subscribe to, produced at WBGO 88.3 FM in Newark. All of our shows archived on our homepage at checkoutjazz.org. I'm Simon Rentner.
Don't sweat the cold rock.
And we have a really cool show today with a really cool artist. Michael Mayo finally made the leap to come out as a solo recording artist, but he also had one other thing he needed to get off his chest. And given this month, you might be able to guess what that is. Stick with us for this candid, heartfelt conversation with Michael Mayo, and I should warn you, there is a little sensitive language here, some curse words, but nothing too bad. Just wanted to warn you.
They all want your love.
I think Michael Mayo is a case study for all the ways that anyone would want to launch a music career. An auspicious debut, he calls it bones. Those melodies, I'm telling you, they are singable. Compelling videos that also go along with those songs. Yeah, you can check that box too. And he's aligned himself with an array of talent that we have been huge fans of on this program. Herbie Hancock, the band Kneebody, Jacob Collier, among others. It also doesn't hurt that he comes from one of the finest musical pedigrees that I can think of. And we'll get to that later. But it brings me great pleasure and delight to welcome Michael Mayo to The Checkout for the first time. What's up, man?
Yo, thank you for having me.
Let's start on this journey for you. How old are you now? And when were you born?
I'm 29, born in 92. I feel totally fine about turning 30. I don't feel weird about it at all. And I'm totally not stressed and everything's fine. I was walking in.
You were walking out. This is obviously your coming out party to the world, mm-hmm. more or mm-hmm. less. No pun intended. We'll get to that later.
Some pun intended.
It's just so fantastic that you have sort of methodically getting all of your ducks in a row to make such this artistic statement that is in bones. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to a track from that album, The Way.
Change your mind. Well, they say love at first sight's not a real thing, but there's just something in the way you move.
I want to rewind the clock back to 2018 specifically. From that moment on, your life has been quite wild, really.
And that was a hell of a year. A hell of a year.
Graduating from New England Conservatory, getting accepted as the third vocalist to be accepted into the Monk Institute. What were the other two vocalists that were accepted before you?
Yeah, so the vocalist before me was Janae Kendrick, who is an incredible singer. She's now in the vocal group Sage, which just was nominated for a Grammy last year. And then before that, it was Gretchen Parlato, who we all know, an incredible singer, groundbreaking, just lovely, lovely people. So it's cool to be a part of that.
And then basically Herbie hijacked you on tour in South America.
Yeah, no, I went on tour with Herbie in 2018 and I was there and I'm still like, was that real? Like, did that actually happen? I'm not sure it totally happened, but there is video evidence. So I guess I have to believe it.
We're not in vain for
And then after that moment, you know, everything else sort of started happening for you. It's because I was seeing you, for instance, at the Winter Jazz Festival as part of Ben Wendell's group, High Heart.
Yep.
And I knew every other cat on the bandstand except you. And so that made your sort of presence noticeable to me. I'm talking about Shy Maestro on piano. Gerald Clayton was there as well. Joe Saunders on double bass and Nate Wood. And there you are. And not exactly a band or session for the faint of heart.
It's literally like college jazz fanboy heaven. Like if I was 19 again and I saw myself up on that stage, I would probably faint.
The music is like hard, right? That, as far everything that I know is like that's some of the hardest modern jazz written.
It is some of the most challenging music I've ever sung before, and I think that's one of the reasons why it was so fun, because not only, you know, it's not hard for the sake of being hard, but it's also like really beautiful melodic music just because Ben is such an incredible composer. And so it was really great, and it fulfilled the, like I said, the college nerd jazz boy dream.
Burning Bright may be the hardest?
By far. Absolutely no contest. Burning Bright is 1,000,000% the hardest. So the song is very intervallic, and it has a lot of really huge leaps. Like, the first melody is like... It's just like that out the gate, you're singing these huge like sixth and octave leaps, and that's the sort of thing that I really like to do, but doing it at that speed, at that level, was a new challenge.
I know it almost broke Shy Maestro's brain, and he's like a piano player, so I can't even imagine how hard it is for a vocalist.
It's another one of those things where I listen to the recording, I'm like, I don't sound stressed on the recording, but I definitely was. I definitely was like, on that take, I was like, am I singing anything right? That's what I hear in my head all the time when I'm singing.
Burning Bright, Ben Wendell's High Heart. So then 2019 then came to be this other kind of monumental year for you, for personal reasons. You know, just from doing the research, and I'm being entirely presumptuous here, so I'm just guessing, but did you come out in a Kneebody song with your sort of identity? Was that sort of your like public statement?
Oh, the What's My Name recording?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good... I've never actually thought about it like that. Not intentionally. I mean, I think that song is very clearly about, you know, like, identity.
Will I complete the mystery of my flesh?
I think it was just a symptom of what was to come. Like, I knew that I was going to be coming out sometime soon, and, like, maybe subconsciously that was sort of, like, the baby step towards that.
It was percolating in your imagination, and you're a fan of E.E. Cummings, and it's no coincidence that he is sort of a champion of free love, you know, from the earliest 20th century.
Specifically with that poem, Crepuscule, when I read it, that one line I will wait out till my thighs are steeped in burning flowers. I will take the sun into my mouth and leap into the ripe air alive. Like, really just like hit me. And I had to sit with it for a minute, and suddenly like that melody just literally came out, which never happens. It's never just like you sort of like vomit the melody out. It's usually like a process of like curation, but that one came pretty quickly.
I will wait out till my thighs are steeped in burning flowers. I will take the sun into my mouth and leap into the ripe air alive. Into my mouth and leap into the ripe air alive.
As you have written in this same song, someday I'll stand on solid land, looking out, open eyes, holding an honest world. But right now I stand so solemn and full of doubt, broken arms molding to any word.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sort of addressing this identity crisis that you were struggling with at the time?
Yeah. I mean, around the time when I wrote What's My Name, I was reflecting a lot on like late high school, early college, and a lot of the stuff that I was thinking about in terms of like being closeted and the cognitive dissonance that comes with knowing on the inside that there's nothing wrong with it, but also being aware that it's not necessarily socially safe, and not understanding sort of how to grab your own identity. That's what that song is about. And specifically that line that you said, but right now I stand so solemn and full of doubt, broken arms molding to any word. It's like you don't have that understanding, and so you're going to mold to the first suggestion that comes your way. And it's a series of trials and errors, I think.
Michael, so when was the moment when you decided, okay, I'm done with this crap. Like, I'm just going to be me.
Yeah. It was after I got off tour with Herbie. There was something, like, I had sort of simultaneous realizations. One of which was, I want to make an album finally. And the other of which was, I need to be out. Like, I don't want my first album to be me not living authentically. Just because I want to hit the ground running. Having this first statement be something that comes from a place of realness and vulnerability. An artist expressing themselves authentically, I think, is one of the greatest acts of service that we can do, because like people seeing other people be themselves helps them be themselves. And so like, I just wanted to start fresh with that.
Well, it sounds like that literally is the remedy that you maybe state in You and You. Let's listen to that right now.
Maybe I can find a life alive in open doors, engrossed in chords. The known is more misleading. I've grown with the unknown in me. The tale is quick to tell itself, given the chance. Your health is in my hands. You've put my words on a pedestal. You wanna get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You wanna get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You wanna get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You wanna get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. Cause now it seems you place your dreams of we in the pond.
palm of my hand. Oh, time and its sands, they pass on hours secondhand. I don't know, oh, how to find your heart when I lost mine. You can't build houses on a flimsy rock. Given the chance, drop all the song and dance. I can't exist on your pedestal. You wanna get closer to me, you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You wanna get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You wanna get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You wanna get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. Drama between you and you. You want to get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You want to get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You want to get closer to me, but you need a remedy for all of the drama between you and you. You want to get closer to me, but you need a remedy. All the drama between you and me. Wanna get closer to me, but you need a remedy. All of the drama between you and me.
I'm a huge fan of what you're doing here. On your tune Stolen Moments, there are like 250 separate tracks on this that you recorded all by your lonesome in your home studio.
Literally in this closet, the people listening won't see it, but there's a closet behind me, and like no pun intended, but I actually recorded the song in the closet. in the literal closet.
So what is that process like? I mean, is that sort of like a lock yourself in your closet scenario for 72 hours and take like food and water breaks until you get it finished? Or is it like kind of a 6-month process of getting all those layers right?
No, I mean, so... definitely more the former. I think I already had the basic idea for the first couple sections of the song because I worked it out on my looper like a year before and then didn't touch it until, you know, it was time to make the record. But when I was actually hunkering down and doing it, it was really just, it was kind of a stream of consciousness composition once I laid down the original part. And then once I got the overall, you know, I sang like a guide melody and then I harmonized that and then like added all the layers from there. But I'm a big fan of sonic exploration And I think sometimes something that I find really exciting is to compose without necessarily having an agenda or a plan and just see where the sound leads me. I don't want to go. It's only stolen mode. It's only stolen mode.
Organically building upon one section to the next and seeing where it's sort of like painting with a blank canvas, but not really knowing what image you are creating.
Exactly. And I think with some of the other songs, you know, I went through a lot of like figuring out the harmony on the piano or whatever it may be, like definitely a very through composed in the sense of like actively saying, this is what this progression is going to be. These are the notes. This is the chart that I'm going to make for the band or whatever. But with this song, I wasn't thinking about theory at all. And there's a freedom in that that I like to check into from time to time, because especially, you know, having gone to music school, it's really easy to like only exist in brain intellect place. There's nothing wrong with brain intellect place, but I think it's important to touch heart place at least I tell my students this, at least once a day. And so I wanted to have at least one song on the album that was like that, and Stolen Moments, I think, is a good representation of that.
So when did your parents know about everything? First, that you had a musical gift like they have, and also everything else?
Well, I don't remember, but my parents tell me that I was matching pitch when I was like 3 months old. I don't know if this is true. I can't corroborate it. You know, you got to cite your sources. My sources are my mom and my dad. But I knew that they, how do I say this? I knew that they knew that I could sing when I was around like 3 or 4. And then ever since then, I don't remember ever not singing. And especially with my parents being who they are, like we sing to communicate, like go wash the dishes and do your homework or whatever it may be. Like when I was having trouble with times tables, like we would make little songs and stuff like that. So I think they always knew on some level. But I don't know if they knew that I was going to get actually really serious about it until around high school-ish.
Interesting.
And to the second part of your question, I think the rest of it sort of was a gradual process. Like I was out to my friends and family, you know, I've been out to my friends and family for a long time now, probably since like middle to late undergrad. But I didn't make that public, you know, here's who I am post until 2019. So yeah, I don't know what you have to coming out isn't like one thing. You do it several times in many different situations, which like sucks that it has to be that way right now. But like, it's not a sort of cut and dry situation.
Just for the record, your parents, mm-hmm. I mean, Come on now. Scott Mayo is currently the musical director for Sergio Mendes and was a saxophonist for Earth, Wind, and Fire. And your mom, Valerie Pinkston, backup vocalist for Diana Ross, also sang with Beyonce, Luther Vandross, Ray Charles, even Morrissey, which is just wild. But, you know, just in terms of, though, explicitly talking about identity with them, were there any, like, moments that you recall?
I mean, yeah, it was definitely a significant moment. I want to say it was, like, between junior and senior year, somewhere around that time of college. And it was sort of similar to when I, you know, made this big coming out post publicly, in that I knew that in order to move forward, I had to sort of make this step. And because you never know, and I, you know, I was lucky enough to have it work out before you come out. You don't know that that's going to be the case. There's always this chance of limbo. And I think that's something that unfortunately, like queer kids, and not only queer kids, people that have some sort of like element to themselves that isn't necessarily societally kosher, if I'm allowed to use that word. And whether or not you actually are safe, the belief that you aren't safe is the thing that keeps you like hiding. And so I had to take the step of like, I believe that I'm going to be okay no matter how people react, because I have the means to like provide for myself, et cetera. And God forbid if they were to say, no, like, we hate you, you're bad, and disown me, which like they didn't do. And I'm so lucky because so many people have that experience. But in the event that that were to happen, I would be okay. And so I just had to sort of have that conversation with myself and make that step anyway. And it actually really resembles when I made the big coming out post.
And what did they say? Well, first of all, what were the emotions that you felt before you? And what did you say specifically? What did they say back to you? And what were you feeling?
You want the play by play?
I do. I mean, it's a huge moment. I mean,
it is. Well, okay. So, without going into too much detail, I was definitely feeling a lot of nervousness and trepidation and fear and anxiety and all the emotions that come with telling your parents something that you know that they potentially might not like and might like get you in trouble. And so I, all summer long, I remember saying like, I'm going to tell them, I have to tell them before I go back to school. That's my like deadline. And like the whole summer passed, and every passing week, I was like, okay, I'm going to do it this week. And then I didn't do it. And then I'm going to do it this week. And then I didn't do it. And finally school was starting again in like a week. And I was like, okay, this is my last chance. And I'm not going back to Boston without having done this.
At the New England Conservatory where you were studying.
Yes. Yep. So I took my dad out to lunch. And I told him there, and he was really great. Gave me a hug. And, you know, reassured me. And that was cool. Really just like sort of textbook parent reaction in a good way. And then things with my mom were like a little rocky for a time. But we did a lot of talking and working and like sobbing. And so now things are way better. And we've gotten to a really good place with it. And that's actually one thing that I'd like to say to people who are listening is, just because something, am I allowed to like curse?
Absolutely, man.
Just because something feels like shit doesn't mean it's going to always feel like shit.
And then did you feel the same kind of nervousness and trepidation when you were pressing that button on Facebook? Ooh, you're like,
oh yeah. Yeah. And the weird thing about social media is that you can stay. I mean, this is just the weird thing about being alive when we're alive, is like, I can sit in this chair and not move and press a button on a magic box. And then like a couple hours later, a person comes to my door with food. And so, you know, I knew that I wanted to make the post. I don't remember having like an exact deadline, but the longer I went without doing it, the more I knew that it was less likely to happen. Excuse me. So I was like, I need to do it while I still have the steam. So I made like five or six different drafts Wow. And then they all were like, this sucks. Like, I don't want to, you know. And finally, I was just like, I'm just going to speak from the heart. As like corny and Disney as it sounds, like, that's really all you can do is, because if you try to curate, I want people to know that I went through this exact thing so that they feel compassion, 75% compassion for this aspect of myself and 7% for this. You know what I mean? Like, it becomes too much of a jumble to worry about. And so I was like, let me just, like, I'm just going to fucking speak from my heart, and whatever people think, they'll think, but it's not even about them. It's about me at the end of the day. It's about showing yourself that you're okay being yourself. And so, yeah, the emotions were real.
It must have felt amazing. Like, honestly, your life must have changed at that moment in ways that you couldn't even, like, forecast.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the most surprising thing, first and foremost, was just, like, the outpouring of love that I received from people I truly did not expect. Because you got to remember, I spent my whole life believing that if people knew, that no one would want to be my friend. I would never work. Like, people wouldn't want to hire me for gigs. You know, like, people would badmouth me. Like, it's all that narrative. And so to have so much love come my way because of that was kind of mind-blowing. And then also, you know, even sitting here having this conversation with you on some level blows my mind, because I spent so much time believing that it was literally impossible. Like, I don't even know if there's a way for me to describe how impossible it felt to be out and be okay. But now that I am, it's like, I wouldn't have it any other way. No, that's going to be on album number two. Wouldn't have it any other way. No.
Well, either that, or you could have hindsight 2020.
There it is.
Still, something inside me refuses to let me live unchained, so I live the same. But as the letter fades, erasing your love like a dying dove, I know now where I went wrong. Something inside me says I should know. Show better. I should talk to you. I should I could I would I should I would I should I could I would I could I would I hindsight is 20 but hindsight is worth more than gold. Hindsight is 20.
2020, Michael Mayo Bones talking about his debut. And yeah, it's Pride, y'all. We're celebrating identity and being ourselves and feeling loved, right? In the community that we call jazz and the arts and being a human. Furthermore, reflecting on how far as a nation we have come as it pertains to these issues, knowing the right ways to even talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And so with that said, I'm really curious about these ideas as it pertains to your other aspects of your identity, being a Black man, for instance, and not only being a Black man, but a jazz musician.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so, you know, this idea of intersectionality, right? Like you mentioned both like being a Black person, being a man, and being a jazz musician. Also on top of that is being a singer in the jazz community, right? There's all these different things that have their own sort of like social dynamics and micro dynamics. And I think for me, I've always been very sensitive to the perception of like a threat as it relates to my sexuality. And again, like even if there is no threat, like even if I'm in a room, I mean, not now, cause I'm like, you know, hello, but before, like, even if I'm in a room of all men who are very liberal and have genuinely no qualms about non-straight people, I can still come into that room and look around and be scared and then be closed off energetically. And I think there's always this fear, right? Even if you aren't coming onto someone or flirting with someone, if somebody knows that, if a man knows that you're interested in men, because, you know, not to paint with a broad brush here, but because heterosexual men tend to be the most insecure about their sexuality, there's always a threat of potential violence. And it's like, I don't want to get beat up for like flirting. And so that was a driving part of the narrative, unfortunately. And that plus being a singer, right? In the jazz world, there's a lot of anti-singer prejudice. And just like people will say,
like, what are those prejudices? Like, just out there. Like what have you heard?
Totally. Yeah. So the archetype of like the stupid singer is a thing, and people have a lot of presuppositions that when they are going to be interacting with a singer, that the singer is going to be really dumb and not know anything and not be able to do anything.
Can't read music. Can't write songs,
as though any one thing is invalidating to someone being a legitimate musician, which is like actual nonsense, right? Like before Western notation, it's not as though like music began once we were able to write it down, right? So like if you strip each of these presumptions down to their, you know, parts, they fall on their face. But people aren't taking the time to like challenge these little narratives. And so it results in them just being shitty to certain people. So, you know, I had to deal with a lot of just like going to a jam session and saying like, I'm a singer. And they're like, oh, okay, what do you want to sing? I'm like, I don't know. I usually go up and figure it out with the band. And they're like, okay, well, we'll maybe get you up. And just being super vibey until they hear you. And then they're like, oh man, like, so nice to meet you. Like, what's your deal? I'm like, why can't we just be that way from the beginning, you know? But I think a lot of it has to do with a fundamental misunderstanding of what it is that we do. And so, you know, I often think of singers and instrumentalists as yin and yang, and each one has something that the other one wants. So for me as a singer, I don't have buttons. So like, I can't just like, look, I mean, now that I've worked on sight singing, I can, but someone put something in front of me, I can't just press a button and have the notes come out. I have to hear it in my head in order for it to come out, right? If a piano player, I don't think you can hear that, but if a piano player were to play those notes, they could be singing Happy Birthday in F sharp till the cows come home and they would sound right on the piano, right? And so like singers want to be able to sing something without hearing it, but instrumentalists have the middleman. And so like, they'll be able to play something without necessarily hearing it, but if they hear something in their head, they have to figure out the math of how that equates to what notes on their instrument, what keys, what valves or whatever. And so I, as a singer, don't have to do that, right? And so we each have something that the other person wants. But we don't give each other enough slack.
I think that's why you're both like secretly jealous of each other. Like, I think there's
Absolutely. And everybody's triggered and nobody wants to deal with it. You know, classic, classic every day, everyone, everywhere.
I hope you don't mind me asking, but also just because I love just being honest and transparent about all these things, what about being a Black man in with these circumstances of coming out? Is that, I mean, because, you know, the whole expression, the DL, I mean, that was sort of like invented in the Black community, right?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there's still a lot of homophobia and transphobia in the Black community. And, you know, you again, you can't paint anything with a broad brush. But if we're looking at like percentages, like within the Black community, there's like a pretty high percentage of people that are like not down, and a lot of gender role type of assumptions are taken as like given to a lot of people, not to everyone, of course, but like I said, I received mostly love when I made the coming out posts, but I had some people that were like, bisexual, that's not real. Guys that are bi are gay, and girls that are bi are straight and curious and just going through a phase. And it's like, no, like if I was gay, I would say I'm gay. But that word doesn't describe the whole situation, just as the word straight doesn't describe the whole situation. So, you know, there's always going to be people that are anti, but like, I don't really care.
If you had a chance to just say something to your fellow jazz musician, Black colleagues looking at you with a squinted eye, like what would you say to them?
I would say that it's possible for someone to feel as strongly about something as you do, but that something can be something else that you don't feel strongly about. And just because the things that you feel very real to you doesn't mean that something that you don't understand can't be real to someone else, and like to have respect for that.
I don't think we have these conversations enough in the jazz world, quite frankly. It's just, Agreed. It's kind of annoying, right?
Agreed. Yeah, no, this is great. It's great to talk about this stuff.
So thank you for being courageous and doing so.
Thanks for having me.
You did this thing for the Jazz Gallery. I don't know if you know this, but I talked to its artistic director, Rio, and we featured one of your songs from the lockdown sessions.
Oh, yeah.
That's not on your album. That's like an exclusive.
Yep. That was a thing that I got together for the gallery.
So why don't we end with that? And Michael Mayo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Simon. This was fun. Thanks for having me.
Now, the red, 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 the red,
You can help yourself, but don't take too much. Oh, mama may have, papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own.
I don't know if this tune even has a name, but I do know that Michael Mayo recorded it for the Jazz Gallery's lockdown sessions, and we have it here. In fact, if you wish to watch our conversation with Ryo Sakariri, the Jazz Gallery's artistic director, you can go to our YouTube channel. And definitely make sure to check out michaelmayomusic.com. His new recording is called Bones. And if you like today's podcast, give us a review. Wouldn't you now? Give us 5 stars, of course. We wouldn't expect anything less. You can also find us on social media. Our Twitter handle is @checkoutjazz. We also have a Facebook page. And you can hit me up, too, on Twitter. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Ratner. Thanks for checking us out.